Did you know nearly one-third of supplement consumers in the U.S. are unsatisfied with the current immune-supporting drinks on the market? Help your consumers get the products they want with Immuse, the novel, clinically researched postbiotic that activates our body's natural defenses at the cellular level for year-round immune support. Formulate with the immune health ingredients backed by 30-plus research studies. Learn more at immusehealth.com. That's Immuse, I-M-M-U-S-E, health.com.
Hello, and thanks for tuning into episode 87 of Taste Radio Insider. I'm Ray Latif, the editor and producer of Taste Radio, and I'm with my BevNet and Nosh colleagues, John Craven, Mike Schneider, and Melissa Traverse. In this episode, we're joined by Allison and Stephen Ellsworth, the co-founders of sparkling apple cider vinegar beverage Poppy, who discussed the brand's evolution and thoughtful alignment with strategic investors. Just a reminder, if you like what you hear on Taste Radio, please share the podcast with friends and colleagues. And of course, would love it if you could review us on the Apple Podcasts app or your listening platform of choice. Well, I hope everyone had a healthy and restful Memorial Day weekend, an extra day to stay at home and take it easy. John, it looked like you had some nice cocktails you were sipping on. Coconut Cartel rum was the main spirit in play?
Yeah, used that a couple of times. Good folks, great product. It's a Guatemalan dark rum that's got coconut water in it, so kind of tasty.
Coconut water and rum in it. It's not just a straight spirit. It's already premixed.
No, it is a spirit that is distilled and contains coconut water in it. So it's not a cocktail. It's a spirit.
Very cool. Very cool. Mike, did you have anything interesting to drink over the weekend?
I did, Ray. My weekend was powered by Revive Sparkling Kombucha, also Agua Bucha, and Ugly Drinks, and a little bit of GTs, of course.
Nice, nice. I was actually sipping on some Revive myself. I'd had some hoarded. I have a hoarding problem, as everyone knows. Anyone who listens to Taste Radio knows I have a hoarding problem. So I hoarded some Revive kombucha. When was it? It must have been, I don't know, at least 4 or 5 months ago. And I found it stashed, and I was like, yes. And I put it into the fridge. It was fantastic.
I actually ordered the sparkling kombucha, Ray, and in a nice little surprise, there was the team sent my bottle cap. Do you remember when they had that contest where you could submit stuff to put on the underside of the bottle cap? I submitted Live Now, Text Later, and they put my bottle cap and some stickers in the box.
Is that a reference to not texting and driving?
Well, yeah, it's a reference to not texting, Ray.
Ah, okay. Just across the board, don't text, just drink.
Just live. You know, you got to live. Live outside in the real world, not your phone.
Exactly.
Why would we do that?
Exactly. Admittedly, it's not very relevant right now, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's a bottle cap that'll live forever. It'll live in perpetuity. It's meaning and message anyway. Melissa, how are you doing?
I'm great. I did not have any kombucha this past weekend, but I have been loving the gin and tonics. I love Fever Trees. I love their naturally light, the lower sugar tonic. I feel like it makes a better tasting drink. And John Craven, I want to hear your professional opinion about this, but I love gin and tonics with the pulp. I looked up the name for what those little like citrus kernels are, and they're called juice vesicles. I love a gin and tonic with pulp. Is that completely profane?
I'm not a huge gin and tonic fan myself, so hey, have at it. Do whatever you want.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, there are some that you can make with like fruit juices and stuff, so why not?
Why not?
Vesicles, 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 vesicles. I just wanted to say it.
It's a good word.
Melissa, you could start a company where you sell the little pulp in a jar as Melissa's Vesicles.
Done.
There you go.
She's already got the domain. She just ordered it right now.
I still have time to apply for New Beverage Showdown, don't I?
Indeed, Melissa. If folks listening are interested in participating, interested in joining us for the New Beverage Showdown, New Beverage Showdown 19, which is presented by Venturing Emerging Brands and operating unit of the Coca-Cola Company, today is the deadline. Today's the last day to apply. That's May 29th. I should say the date of publication of this podcast is the last day to apply. All the information you need will be in a link in the show notes. Look for that. But please, expedite your application because once May 30th hits, we're not accepting anyone else. Also, preceding our showdown competition on June 9th and 11th is Nosh's Pitch Slam 8, which is sponsored by 301 Inc. The deadline to apply for that competition is also May 29th, the day of the publication of this podcast. If you're interested in applying, we'll also add the link to do so in the show notes. Once again, today is the last day to apply.
Hey, Ray, is it today?
Yes, it is today. It is May 29th.
So sad.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually really excited, though, for our New Beverage Showdown competition, as I am always, because I host that competition. I'll be hosting it for the Pitch Slam as well, but our judging panels are starting to come into clarity here, and one of our judges I'm so excited for is Jamie Danick, the co-founder and CEO of Hum Kombucha, will be joining us for the final round of the competition on June 11th. Talk about a great entrepreneur.
Yeah, no, I mean, Hum Kombucha has come a long way since its beginnings, just like a lot of the kombucha brands out there. And, you know, their latest product, the Hum Zero, just got some of that this week. You know, Mike seems to be hogging all the kombucha at his house, but I did get some Hum Kombucha Zero samples. Haven't tried it yet, though, since had to take it over to the office first for some photos. But yeah, great stuff. And yeah, she's a great person. So
Nate's taking photos today, John. You should have it. You should have it back and be able to try it soon.
If you're not going to steal it,
I'm going to try. I'm definitely going to
try. Kombucha castle or whatever you live in over there.
Kombucha thief. The worst kind.
It's a hard job, but somebody's got to do it.
We'll be releasing full details about the judging panels for the competition for the New Beverage Showdown in the coming days. Look for it on BevNet. And we'll be releasing the judging panels for the Pitch Slam, Nosh's Pitch Slam, also in the coming days. We have so many innovative and diverse brands applying for that competition.
I've been watching the brands flow in, and the conversations have been happening with the, you know, the brand sales team, and Melissa and the crew have curated just a phenomenal list of brands for both competitions. Pitch Slam in particular, I'm not sure how we're going to decide.
It's going to be really hard. There are so many fantastic applications coming in, and we're really excited to see what happens.
Melissa, you talked to a pretty early stage brand called Picasa earlier this week. Are they applying for the competition?
Yes, I did, and they just might be.
You never know.
You never know. They are preparing to launch their chickpea chips. They're 100% chickpea flour. So usually, or quite often, a brand that uses a bean flour will also incorporate like rice or corn flour, but it's 100% chickpea flour. One of their co-founders grew up in the south of France and grew up eating soca, which is that, I'm sure you guys know that, chickpea flour pancake that's so delicious. So they are in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign because they're doing their own production, which is certainly a large undertaking that requires capital. So they
are doing a brand new company doing their own production.
It's wild. It's wild. Yeah. So they have a pretty proprietary product, and it sounds like it would be harder for them to use a co-manufacturer because of the nature of their product.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely a large undertaking.
It's definitely one of the downsides to being first to market is that, you know, you're first to market and there aren't co-packers out there who know how to produce your product. So you have to go to a co-packer and teach them how to make your product. And there's also, you know, there's setup costs for that. It's a tough game.
This is an issue that's come up in the showdown competition a number of times where we hear an entrepreneur say they're launching their own production facility. It actually came up with the folks that we're interviewing today. It's interesting to hear their perspective on that in our conversation. So we'll get to that shortly. But, you know, Bob Burke discusses this topic, this very specific topic at length as part of our BevNet and Nosh education series. You can get full access to his talk and others, which include literally hundreds of hours of content about business planning, scaling your brand, retail and distribution, investment and funding strategies, marketing, and so much more. Simply by subscribing to BevNet and Nosh, the easiest way to do that, head to bevnet.com, look for the red subscribe button in the upper right-hand corner, and you are on your way.
That's all you have to do. And we have different tracks. So we have early stage, intermediate, and advanced tracks. So no matter where you are in your business, we've got something for you.
Subscribers also get access to our video content. So we've got fresh new shows like Office Hours, which are interactive. And you also get access to our new BevNet and Nosh virtually live event, which we're pretty excited about. You can check out the details on BevNet.com and Nosh.com.
Very cool. Can't wait to see the lineup for that event. And once again, head to BevNet or Nosh.com to learn more. Mike, I heard you're starting a beverage company.
Ray, let's say I was. Do you have any suggestions for a complete partner?
Absolutely. Ingredion. Ingredion is a leading global plant-based ingredient solutions provider to the food and beverage industry with a diverse portfolio, including sweeteners and sugar reduction technologies, plant-based proteins, starches, and hydrocolloids.
Of course. Ingredion's 360 value framework delivers value according to your brand's specific needs through consumer well-being, environmental impact, and value creation. Ingredion's market research and insights for innovation can help uncover opportunities within the beverage space. For instance, figuring out what added health benefits consumers need. They have a network of technical experts that will help you solve your pain points to get you to market faster. With Ingredion, you gain a partner who helps you deliver the total beverage experience that keeps consumers coming back.
To learn more about Ingredion, head to tasteradio.com/beverage.
The New Beverage Showdown returns to BevNet Live in New York City on June 12th and 13th. Pitch your beverage startup in front of a panel of expert judges, our live audience, and viewers tuning into the live stream. To learn more, visit bevnetlive.com.
Melissa, you were crunching on something before we got on the mics here. What was that?
So Hue grain-free crackers are perhaps maybe my newest favorite snack. They hit my local grocery store shelf just recently. And I'm just realizing this is the second grain-free cracker I'm talking about in this episode. So it's definitely a thing. They have no vegetable oils and actually no oils at all that I could see in the ingredients. They don't use any binders like gums or lecithins or anything. And they're really small and really thin. I think they're delicious. Obviously, Hue is the brand that makes organic, paleo, and vegan chocolate. And they were the winner of our 2019 Best New Product for their baking gems. And I think these crackers are they're a big hit with me, that's for sure.
Very cool. It's interesting that they're making that leap from chocolate to crackers, but snacking is snacking, right?
Definitely going to be partnering with Melissa's vesicles.
Everything comes full circle. I love it. All right, it's time to get to our featured interview for this episode. That's with Allison and Stephen Ellsworth, the co-founders of sparkling apple cider vinegar brand Poppy. If you're a regular reader of BevNet, you might recognize the wife and husband team who triumphed in BevNet's New Beverage Showdown 12 competition. Or you might recall them from their 2018 appearance on Shark Tank, in which they received a $400,000 investment from beverage industry luminary Rohan Oza. In both appearances, the brand was known as Mother Beverage. Earlier this year, the Ellsworths unveiled the newly named, newly packaged Poppy, which is positioned as a better-for-you soda. In the following interview, I spoke with Allison and Stephen about their foray into the beverage industry and lessons learned from their first year in business, one that included their own production facility. They also spoke about how consumer awareness about Poppy's key ingredient has evolved over the years and how they're maintaining their independence and vision for the brand while aligned with influential and experienced strategic partners. Hey folks, it's Ray with Taste Radio. I'm going to call right now with Stephen and Allison Ellsworth, the co-founders of Poppy. Stephen, Allison, how are you?
Hey Ray, how are you? We're great.
Yeah, everything's great over here.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good myself. Before we hopped on the call, you guys mentioned you're in a car right now, which is a first for me. I've never recorded with someone who on the other end is in a car.
It's great for sound. It's padded, so it's either this or screaming kids in the background.
Screaming kids in the background wouldn't be nice to our audio engineer, Joe, who's been so nice to me over the years. I couldn't do that to him. So thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
So Poppy, formerly known as Mother Beverage, you know, we've known each other for, I want to say, about 3.5 years. Mother Beverage being a winner of BevNet's New Beverage Showdown 12 back at BevNet Live in 2016. And it was amazing to hear about your story. And I'd love to go over some of the origin story of Poppy. You know, like many entrepreneurs, you guys started in your kitchen, began selling the product at farmers markets. And one of the most interesting parts of the development of the brand is how you got your first big break.
Can you talk about how you positioned yourself and prepared yourself for that opportunity and what the opportunity was?
Yeah, of course. You know, I think we kind of have to go back to the beginning of why we even started the company. And it kind of goes back to a personal story of mine that I personally have always been a really healthy person growing up. I always ate really healthy. I like to work out. And even in college, I was a dance major. And so, you know, I just felt really good. And then after college, I graduated and got a degree and started working in oil and gas research. And I hit the road and was traveling and all of a sudden just was not feeling very good. My stomach always hurt. I had a bloating feeling and had skin issues. And I just didn't know what was going on. So I started going to doctors and they couldn't figure it out. And after a few years, I just got fed up. And I read online, of course, that drinking apple cider vinegar could kind of help reset and detox your body. So at this point, I was so desperate that I was like, okay, I'm going to try this, and started taking shots of apple cider vinegar every day, or putting it in water, or mixing it with different things just to get it in. And I was shocked after 2 weeks of how amazing I felt. I really feel like it reset and detoxed my body. And the only problem was it tasted horrible. I love the way it made me feel, but I was like, I cannot do this straight vinegar for the rest of my life. And I love to cook. So I went to the kitchen, started playing around with different recipes. But for me personally, I really wanted to keep it healthy and for it to taste good, which I think that combination is really hard to do. So I feel like I landed on a really good recipe, started sharing it with Steven and family and friends. And naturally, we all loved it. And we took it to the farmer's market and started selling it on the weekends at the farmer's market. And to your point earlier, what you were talking about, we were there after about 3 weeks, and a person comes by, she tries the product and she goes, "This is so amazing. I typically don't do this. I'm actually the local forager for Whole Foods." And she gave us her card and she was like, "You guys have to be in Whole Foods." This was a hobby at this point. We were like, "What is going on? Like, I just created this product for something that I truly loved. This Whole Foods buyer is telling us we have to be in Whole Foods." And, you know, we just went for it. We opened our own production facility. We quit our full-time jobs and just jumped in all at once. And like, we were off to the races. So it's kind of crazy how we got started.
You guys opened your own production facility. That's kind of aggressive and not something that a lot of folks would do. Why'd you do that?
For us, really to protect the integrity of the product and really make it in a way that we felt really good about was important to us. And so obviously opening up our own manufacturing facility allowed us to control that from start to finish. The great thing about that, even though it was challenging in the beginning, it's really allowed me and Allison to develop this intimate relationship with how the product should be made. So as we've continued to scale, we've really been able to take those learnings and apply it to our trusted partners.
The production facility is not something you still currently have, right?
Correct. Yeah, we got out of that business.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. So I assume that in hindsight, it wasn't the best decision.
It's a lot of work to manufacture yourself. And when we originally got into it and started making our own product, we actually had a friend who ran a brewery here in Dallas. And he's like, "Oh, hey, I'll help you guys get all set up." And it was just like a natural progression of us doing it. But it really, manufacturing yourself can stunt the growth of a company, because instead of meeting with new retailers and talking about growth and the future, you're busy putting caps on bottles. And so I think we realized it pretty early on that that was probably not the best thing to do to grow the business quick. And Stephen kind of touched on it. The fact that we were able to actually manufacture ourselves gave us such a great understanding of how our product is made. And now that we've moved to a co-packer, it's given us, I think, an edge in that we could talk to them and understand that process over other people that just go direct to a co-packer.
You guys mentioned a couple of times that you were oil and gas analysts turned beverage entrepreneurs, and certainly the first that I've ever met who've made that leap. You didn't immediately quit your day jobs, though. Why not? And what effect did that have on the development of the business?
We did quit our jobs pretty early on. This was a passion project, right? We didn't jump into this industry thinking that we were going to start the next beverage, for better or worse. Allison had this product that she created that she loved. She shared it with friends and family. They loved it. We took it to the farmer's market. They loved it. A Whole Foods buyer approached us and she loved it. And so I think that once we saw this validation, we knew pretty early on that we had something special here. And so we did, in fact, quit our jobs, but we kept them long enough where we felt comfortable until we felt comfortable making this jump.
I mean, I think what a lot of people don't realize too, unless you are in our industry, is from the time she approached us and she was like, you guys have to be in Whole Foods, to the time you're on the shelf was about 11 months, right? So we started down the road of starting our own production facility. I jumped in first and quit, and then I was kind of doing it, but we're a little crazy on the other aspect is when we started this, I was actually 3 months pregnant. So we like to kind of tell people that we literally started a company, had a baby, and quit our jobs all within like 1 year. And we took our life savings and put into it as well. So, you know, after a while, we just knew in our gut that this is something that we really wanted to do. And we just went for it. I think that's just being an entrepreneur.
You knew in your gut, no pun intended.
I know, right? Exactly.
As I mentioned, we met about 3.5 years ago, and I was recently watching your presentation in the semifinal round of our New Beverage Showdown and was struck by the comments from one of the judges, or a comment from one of the judges who said that, I think this is a product for people who are in the know. Do you see it that way? I mean, how much has changed since that time? I mean, how much consumer awareness has changed or evolved about ACV?
First of all, I could put myself back there. It's like it happened yesterday, because I think she was spot on. And even more specifically, it referred to the name Mother. We were talking about the name Mother and how much that resonated with people. And she said, Mother, yeah, that's great, but I really think it resonates with people that are in the know, because the mother of vinegar. And I think that that really just continues to speak to ACV as a whole. People know that it's super healthy for them, but the biggest challenge is they also know that it doesn't taste very good, right? And so I think that what you saw as Mother and what you see as Poppy has really embodied that transition and really adapting to the consumer. Consumers are, they demand an amazing taste, but now they're also demanding functionality. They want low sugar, they want low calories, and they want a positive benefit back to the consumer. So I think that that's really was a huge spark for the transition, for the rebrand, from Mother to Poppy, and quite frankly, has allowed us to build this platform and to reposition this product that is geared for mainstream consumers.
Yeah, we used to have apple cider vinegar plastered on the front of our Mother bottle. And what we've realized is people, like Steven said, they want to have it, but they don't want to know that they have it, because it is still a very fraction amount of people that really want to drink it every day. They've heard it's good for you. Their grandmas told them they need to drink it, do these things. But what we love with Poppy is the fact that it's in there, but it's not so in your face. And so we get the reaction now when people drink Poppy of they drink it, they're like, this is so good. And they turn the can over and they're shocked that there's apple cider vinegar in it. And so then we've gotten a consumer now that's like, whoa, this tastes good. This is healthy. It's a great addition versus like, I don't know, there's vinegar in that. I don't know if I want to try it. So it's something that was a really big factor in the rebrand for us.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about the rebrand and how it came about. It kind of all started when you guys appeared on the hit reality TV show Shark Tank and picked up an investment from the legendary beverage professional Rohan Oza. You know, we've had folks on the show who have appeared on Shark Tank before, and it's always great to hear about how they got on the show, because I'm sure there's folks listening right now that want to know and want some advice on how to do that.
Yeah, so it's a great story. We love to tell it. honestly, we were seeing really positive growth locally and at the farmers markets. But Allison and I, quite frankly, we had bigger dreams. We knew that this product had the ability to go global, right? But we also were aware that we needed funding and we needed strategic partners really to help spark the growth of the business. And Allison was scrolling on Instagram and saw a casting call in Dallas in 2 days, right? So we looked at each other and just like we did with Mother, we said, what the heck? Why not? Let's do this. So 2 days later, we were literally pitching our brand to Shark Tank and really the rest is history.
You know, this was a few years after we started and I was pregnant with our second child. I was actually 9 months pregnant. So we were going back and forth with the producers, whether or not I could fly and get out there for the show. But once again, we were like, it's okay. Like the baby's healthy. We're going to go for it. And it was kind of nice because once we got out there, there's not a lot of know of who your shark is or you don't find that out until the night before. So we didn't even know Rohan was going to be on the show. Looking back, the producers told us like they were definitely wanting us to pitch to them. And that's what, why they were kind of pushing, even though I was pregnant and whether or not we should reschedule because the producers loved our product. They wanted to see success for us. And we were really excited once we found out it was Rohan, because I mean, at the end of the day, all the sharks are amazing, but you really cannot beat him when it comes to the beverage industry.
So not knowing Rohan Oza was going to be one of the sharks, one of the judges on the show, what was your strategy going in? How much were you asking for? And did you prepare your pitch to appeal to one of the, I guess, long-term judges or long-term sharks? Because Rohan isn't on every show, but on every show you do seem to see some of the same folks like Mr. Wonderful, et cetera.
Yeah, I think we went into Shark Tank. Like we said, we jumped in with both feet. We wanted to leave there with a deal, and we had full intentions of doing so. As far as the ask, I think that's a little bit of a loaded question because you kind of work with the producers to kind of find a balance of what the ask is based on other businesses that have pitched on the show. So that was kind of a little bit of a moving target there, but we knew that we wanted to align ourselves with a strategic that could help really, you know, like I said, spark the growth of the business. And so when we found out that Ro and some others were going to be on there, it was just icing on the cake. And like Allison said, the one great thing about Shark Tank is everything's really under the radar. The producers and the whole staff work really hard to make the experience as authentic as possible.
As you mentioned, you rebranded from Mother Beverage to Poppy, and the investment from Rohan elicited that shift. Talk about that process and why he urged you to make that change.
Yeah, so like I said, he fell in love with us and the product, and he will not be shy in saying he did not love the packaging or the name. And on top of it, we actually weren't able to trademark the word Mother. You can't really own that. So it kind of actually gave us an opportunity to step back and evaluate what was missing in the market. And we really feel like our taste profile was more like a soda, a healthier soda. And so we really went after that and leaned into it. And it was not an easy process. We worked really closely. If a lot of people don't know, Cavu has a internal brand team that we worked really close with, and an internal design team. And it took us about a year. And we did a lot of studies from, we would sit in a group at Rohan's house and be like, what, if you were a car, what kind of car would you be? And like really dove deep and did consumer studies. And it was quite a process we knew there was a gap for the Gen Z. We're looking and searching for a healthier soda. Soda has not changed in years, like basically since the 1960s, even if it's before that. So in 1960s, you had the Coke, the sugary with the chemicals. And then in the 80s, the Diet Coke craze came and it was the chemicals, but you have all the unnatural sweeteners. And then in the 2000s, they had the Zero Cokes, right? And now I feel like the generation now, it's just calling for something different in this soda marketplace. And we really feel like we're that soda for the next generation. And we feel like Poppi just, it's more than just a brand name, right? It feels happy. It's fun. It's lively. So with going through that, we kind of got there through the brand. And it wasn't an easy place or anything that we went through, but we really feel like we did a good job to find that gap of what was needed in the marketplace to be the next better for you soda that people just love.
How do you do that in a way that elicits refreshment first and foremost? You know, what does Poppi mean? What do the colors on the can represent?
Like Allison was saying, the emotion that we want to elicit is joy. I think that Coca-Cola has really done a great job in kind of eliciting that emotional response from a consumer, right? And so we want to do the same thing, and we feel like that's what Poppi has done. There's a bigger story around the rebrand where we were kind of going back and forth between white labels and color labels. And I think that landing on color really goes into this. We want to make people feel happy when they drink it because it tastes good. We also want Poppi to make them feel happy because it makes them feel good physically and not just emotionally. And so, like Allison was saying, Poppi is more than just a brand. We think that it's an adjective. It's a way of describing how you feel. And I think kind of going back to that piece of the rebrand and really connecting with consumers and their struggle with ACV and communicating refreshment, that's why this rebrand was really so important to overcome that obstacle. We even found with Mother that if you could just get them to try the product, they love that. And so that really was the major goal of the rebrand and the updated packaging, was to communicate refreshment and great taste. And we think we've done that.
You mentioned Rohan's team a couple times. Rohan's team is inclusive of Kavu Venture Partners, the food and beverage firm that he co-founded. And a few months after his investment on Shark Tank, Kavu invested in Mother Beverage, again, now Poppi. I can assume after the Shark Tank deal, there was a lot of buzz about your brand and your company, and that there might have been some other strategics interested in participating in your next investment round. How did you evaluate that opportunity to partner with Kavu? Did you turn down other offers?
We definitely were entertaining other offers, but just for a brief second. I think that the small interaction that we've had with Ro just made Kavu the natural fit. As you know, Ro is a partner and founder of Kavu. And so we had loved the interaction that we had with Ro and interfacing with Kavu kind of during the diligence portion of it. And we knew that they would be great partners as well. So the decision was pretty easy for us.
Mike, I was just in the kitchen and I saw this really cool THC-infused beverage brand called Eighth Wonder.
Ah, chill brand. They make cannabis bevs as well as beer and spirits. The product you're talking about is a super tasty cherry limeade cannabis seltzer called Lil Bit. And did you know Eighth Wonder was acquired last year by Houston's BioCity Hemp?
Yes, I did. That deal created a world-class, vertically integrated cannabis and craft beverage company. Bio's science-based processes for extracting THC from hemp have made the company the gold standard for cannabis products across Texas and beyond.
Bio's cannabis portfolio includes Eighth Wonder as well as Howdy and Beach Break, all of which are distributed throughout Texas and Louisiana.
You can learn more about all these brands at eighthwonder.com, siphowdy.com, and sipbeachbreak.com.
On June 12th and 13th in New York City, hear from Icelandic Glacial, Lemon Perfect, GoPuff, Sachet, Diageo Ventures, and Lowe's Foods during the leading event for the beverage industry. Save on BevNet Live tickets through April 26th. Just visit BevNetLive.com.
Obviously, Rohan and Kavu are highly influential names in food and beverage. I know you guys said that you trust them and they give you the freedom to execute your vision as you see fit. At the same time, I mean, they, as I mentioned, have a lot of experience in the industry. I can imagine that it's kind of difficult to say no to them when there's a disagreement in terms of the brand's direction. You know, how does that relationship work so that you are able to maintain your voice and vision for the company?
As you said, they have a ton of experience in the industry. And because of that, they understand that a critical part of developing a brand is the founder story and being authentic. And so because of that understanding, it makes aligning on our goals and the overall direction of the business very, very painless. So we've really found that they're great partners and advisors. They truly are there when we need them. And when we don't need them, they're not there.
You know, you can talk about the benefits of ACV, apple cider vinegar, all day, and you can talk about great taste. And again, you know, a beautiful can, a beautiful packaging. The consumer also has another factor in determining whether or not they're going to buy the product, and that's price. And you're at a premium price point, significantly more than a can of soda. So how do you communicate to the consumer that this is worth spending the potentially 3-4 times more that it's going to cost than, say, a can of sparkling water or soda?
That's a great point. And that's something that is at the forefront. I think $2.99 for a 12-ounce canned product is premium. And I think that there's a couple ways that we're working really hard to communicate that, especially in these early stages. If you look at the back of a can of soda, or even, let's say soda, right? It's carbonated sugar, if you will. It's citric acid, it's carbonated water, it's flavorings, high fructose corn syrup or sugar. You look at the back of ours and we use organic cane sugar. We use real fruit juice. We use pure, raw, unfiltered apple cider vinegar as the base for our products. We only use non-GMO, kosher, and plant-based ingredients. So, of course, there's going to be a premium associated with that. So that helps as far as communicating the higher price point. I think that the other element of it is the brand that we've created. When you've built such a brand that's so visually dynamic, that's socially and digitally connected, that also communicates premium as well. And we've seen a lot of success with that. But I think over time, obviously, as you grow the business and you work to reach a larger audience and really capture a bigger market opportunity, cost no doubt has to come down for it to meet the consumer's expectations. But for us, what's so important is maintaining the integrity of the product, maintaining the integrity of the brand. And we know that our consumer base is really loyal. And so we'll continue to work to decrease those costs to meet the expectations of the consumers. But I think at these early stages, it's really maintaining those premium ingredients and building a really premium brand that's been the most impactful in communicating and justifying the price point.
You're not the only one with the idea of making a better-for-you benefit-filled soda, or soda alternative, that is. You know, I can name at least 3 or 4 brands that are in that similar space, in cans, with attractive branding. There's competition growing, is I guess what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. How do you stay ahead of that competition? You know, what are you thinking about, not just for the next few months, but for the next few years in terms of how to be a category leader?
We love that the category is growing. It's raising awareness of what soda should be, quite frankly. We view our biggest competition as traditional CSD. And it's a massive category that's, quite frankly, ripe for disruption. And so I think for us in these early stages is building a brand that is, we like to say Gen Z or bust, that's socially and digitally connected. People, a brand that people want to be seen with and that they feel connected to. And then obviously it's speed to market, right? We've got to make sure that we're aligning ourselves with the right distributors, the right retailers. And like most other categories, that's really the recipe for success is building a brand that people love and aligning yourself with strategics along the way.
Well, again, you have a pretty fantastic strategic that you're working with. Allison, Stephen, again, you know, having met you about 3.5 years ago and seeing you guys win the showdown on stage at BevNet Live, it's just so amazing and so rewarding, honestly, personally for me, to see the development of the brand and see how far you guys have come and how well you're doing. Congrats on everything to this point and so much luck and love going forward.
Thank you, Ray. We believe BevNet has been a part of our story since the beginning, and we have a lot of love for you guys too. So we appreciate that.
Definitely. Yeah, we were babies when we won the New Beverage Showdown, and we've loved that validation and has really given us fuel to keep pushing forward here. So it's been great to have you guys along with for the ride.
Thank you so much for saying that. And once again, thank you so much for being on Taste Radio.
Thanks, Ray. Have a good day.
Take care.
You too. Thank you.
That brings us to the end of episode 87 of Taste Radio Insider. Thank you so much for listening. And thanks to our guests, Allison and Stephen Ellsworth. Please subscribe to Taste Radio on the Apple Podcasts app, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. As always, for questions, comments, ideas for future podcasts, please send us an email to ask@tasteradio.com. On behalf of the entire Taste Radio team, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.